Blog Talk Radio.
This is Question. You know me as the amazing Question. Would you believe it or not, can you imagine my dream? Whenever I'm in Vegas, I enjoy picking up girls with Mr. Media.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to Joe Murray, creator of the Emmy Award-winning animation series Rocko's Modern Life and Camp Lazlo. He's got a great new book out called Creating Animated Cartoons with Character. Stick around. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Stop by and check it out. There are more than 600 archived celebrity interviews for your listening pleasure. The show is brought to you today by thepartyauthority.us. Planning a wedding, mitzvah, or corporate event in the New York, New Jersey area? For any and all occasions, call the Party Authority nationwide at 1-800-DIAL-DJS. That's 1-800-342-5357, where one call does it all. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of two-dimensional, banana-mouthed warthogs in the new media capital of the world and home of the best team in baseball, St. Petersburg, Florida. Well, Joe Murray has a natural flair for animation and characters that are bursting with character. It almost sounds redundant, but I mean it. Now, having said that, between you and me, and I got to be honest here, he is also responsible for creating some of the ugliest cartoon characters in history. I mean, have you ever looked at Rocko, the star of his original Nickelodeon hit, Rocko's Modern Life? What is that? And Lazlo, OMG, folks. But his cartoons look great, despite the somewhat hideous characters. The animation is wonderful, the movement is great, and kids love them. I know this firsthand. My almost 14-year-old daughter to this day insists she is Camp Lazlo's number one fan. Now, Murray, the creator of all this madness, just published a fascinating new book called Creating Animated Cartoons with Character, a guide to developing and producing your own series for TV, the web, and short film. And even if you're not a wannabe animator, but just a fan of the art, you'll find plenty to read in here. The book is packed with practical information, behind-the-scenes anecdotes, rare production sketches, and Q&As with an array of familiar animators, from Craig McCracken, the creator of the Powerpuff Girls and Dexter's Laboratory, to the creator and voice of SpongeBob SquarePants, respectively, Steve Hillenburg and Tom Kenny. And speaking of Tom Kenny, here's a video of Joe Murray and Tom Kenny at work on a new series they're developing for KaboingTV.com called Frog in a Suit.
So I had Tom, Kenny, and Carlos Alzaraki in for a record last week. We were doing the next episode of Frog in a Suit. And it was called Mind Your Tongue, and it's got Sergeant Spittle and Harvey Croak in it. Sergeant Spittle is a toad that, he's French, he's the sergeant in the Croakville Police Department. And, he was mistaken for a frog and had both of his legs cut off at one point, so he's got this attitude towards frogs. So there's a part where Harvey Croak calls him the amputee toad of some sort, and Tom Kenny likes to take it upon himself to at times make sure he's protecting our youth and other groups that may need protecting.
Okay, this ain't fun anymore. What the heck is taking that amputee shirt so long?
That's good.
This ain't fun anymore. Oh, this ain't fun anymore. What the heck is taking that amputee shirt so long?
Okay, good.
Hey, you know what?
What?
Can I do a couple alternates for amputees just in case people go, wow, amputee, that's like...
Okay.
That's a little harsh.
Harsh?
I like it, but who knows? It'll give you all just in case somebody complains about amputee.
Okay, that's a good idea.
I don't like that one thing in your cartoon.
Very Tom and Kenny, the protector.
I'm always stuck up for amputees.
Now, what the heck is taking that stubby sheriff so long? What the heck is taking that puny sheriff so long? Now, what the heck is taking Sheriff Go-Kart so long?
I call him Sheriff Go-Kart.
His go-go cart. He's got one of them go-go carts.
So we have a lot of other clips like this that I'll be sharing pretty soon. I'm going to share one of them during the live stream coming up on this Tuesday, August 24th, from 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific time. If you want to join us, it's ustream.tv, and just go to Joe Murray Studio Live and check it out. It's going to be a Q&A, and I'll be showing some stuff and celebrate the release of my new book, Creating Animated Cartoons with Character. That's coming out actually on Tuesday, August 24th, so you see the little tie-in. So anyway, I hope you join us, and over and out. There'll be more later. All right, thanks.
We'll have an actual preview from Frog in a Suit in the second half of today's show. Joe Murray, welcome to Mr. Media.
Well, thank you for having me, Bob. I've never been introduced before when we were talking about the hideousness of my characters, but...
I was frankly a little afraid to say it because I thought when I went to introduce you that you wouldn't be there, but
they're my children, and you're telling calling them hideous. No, you know what? The characters, and I talk about this in the book, are all about imperfections, so that goes along with that.
So you're going to stick with us for the half hour, huh?
I've never had an intro like that.
Maybe we'll be question to question. I'll have to keep checking in to make sure you're still with us. The animation itself is tremendous. Some of the characters are a little frightening looking.
Well, you know, when Rocco first came out, it was coming off of the I call it the dark period of animation of Strawberry Shortcake and My Little Pony, and I definitely was looking for anti-cute, so I suppose I accomplished that.
he's definitely anti-cute. I mean, my sense of animation over, I don't know, maybe the last 15 years, and I'm thinking, you know, John Crisfalusi's Ren and Stimpy, is that the characters got a bit uglier, but that the jokes got funnier, and probably, and my daughter will hate me for using the word, they got hipper.
Well, you know, there always was an audience for animation that wasn't being catered to, and it's not always, there was this attitude of it's only a children's medium, and cartoons on television should only be aimed at children, and that was not the case. And it took Nickelodeon in the early 90s to take a chance and say, hey, there are other cartoon viewers out there. And it definitely is. And then, you know, The Simpsons started tapping into that, Family Guy. I mean, Flintstones at the beginning was an adult show, showed in prime time. But it seemed like later on they kind of lost that. And there was also an attitude of kids will watch anything that you put on the air, and you can talk down to them. And kids are smart. Kids know entertainment, especially now, these days, even more so. So, they got hipper. They got smarter.
It seemed like Rocco and Ren and Stimpy, and I guess a little bit later, Johnny Bravo, they reminded me of sort of the early 70s, late 60s, the underground comics, where... You know, it looked on the surface, if you just look quickly, the images looked like they were for kids, but the content was clearly aiming higher.
You know, I think a lot of these, at least with my, I only speak for myself, and the other shows you mentioned are brilliant, and in my sense, what I wanted to do was to create a cartoon that kids could watch and adults could watch with them, you know, mm-hmm. So have the parents sit next to their kids on the couch and enjoy what was going on. And what I get and what we were trying to do was that there are levels of the cartoon that you understand when you're 6, you get a few more jokes when you're 9, and you get a lot more jokes when you're in college. So you're going back and revisiting, you know, the cartoons. And I think entertainment on any level, in various types of entertainment, if it can approach that, it has good legs, good longevity.
Well, I think the Pixar movies have taken that to the next step over the last 12 or 13 years as well, really finding a way to make it look very kid-friendly, but that the content has a very broad appeal, even beyond those of us who would probably watch any cartoons that were put in front of us anyway.
I agree with that. Yeah, the writing, it's interesting that when the Pixar cartoons came out, there was a lot of the industry that said, oh, well, 3D animation, you know, CGI is the way to go. Yeah, that was brilliant, but the writing is what set them apart. And it took a few bad CGI movies for them to realize that the writing at Pixar is far and above what a lot of other animated movies were doing. And it all comes down to the writing, even in TV animation. I was gonna say,
and here, folks, I've got the book. I'm holding it up to the camera here. Is writing the single most important factor in creating an animated series? Is it characters? What is that number one, you know, characteristic?
My whole point is it has a tier effect of what's important, and you don't sacrifice the basis foundation. The foundation for me is the character, and finding a character that you relate with, that you want to write for, that you feel is part of you, and you know, it's so much of you, your audience is going to gravitate to it. The second part of that is story. And as far as animation being, it is an extremely visual medium, and I don't like to do anything in animation that doesn't need to be animated. There's a lot of what I call illustrated radio at times in animation. So that definitely comes into play. But if you don't have good content and good characters that you care about, that you feel like you know, and you can relate with them, I don't think you have much of a foundation for a good cartoon.
Are there many shows on the air today that have very strong characters and poor writing, or really great writing and lousy characters?
You're trying to get me in trouble with my colleagues.
I'm not.
You know, animation, and if you'll see in the book, there are so many levels to getting a show finally on the air. There are so many different hoops that need to be jumped through, that if something actually gets on the air and the writing maybe is not up to par, or the designs are not up to par, you don't know the reason why. So I don't like to go in and start making judgments on other people's work. You know, it's a challenge just to get the show on the air. So that's, but, you know,
without naming a show or a creator, because I can appreciate you not wanting to do that. Let me ask the question in a broad way. Are there shows that actually go through, I mean, the process that you outline in the book for going from, you know, that little sprig of an idea to, you know, full series and commitment, is it really possible that somebody could make it all the way to a series and then, you know, not have one of those two elements? Would somebody really green light a show like that?
Yes.
Okay, there's a good answer.
Yes, definitely so. I've seen it happen. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's strange, because one of the reasons why I'm starting this animation website called KaboingTV.com, which I want to bring more creators who maybe have not made the cut in the network realm to come into internet, being able to share what they have with the audiences, even though, you know, the networks don't always have the right answers. The networks don't always, just because you get rejected by a network doesn't mean it's a great idea. It's not a great idea. Mm-hmm. I know of a show in particular, I won't say what it is, but the pilot was not very well done, and there was one gag in the pilot that tested off the charts with the focus group testing, and they decided to green light the show based on that. And there are stories like that happen. And, you know, and there are a dozen stories, or even hundreds of shows that should be on the air that are not. So, you know, it's a bit of a lottery at times, and being at the right place at the right time with the right type of, you know, people in charge making the decisions, and you having your crew and your, you know, being on top of your game.
Do you, as you look at the number of animated series that are on the air today on broadcast and cable, let's say, is it about the same as it was when you launched Rocco? Is it a little more?
Well, I mean, it's a totally different environment now than it was when we launched Rocco. I mean, we were, the early 90s is really the beginning of, you know, like what we were talking about earlier, of cartoons that were breaking out of the mold of the doldrums of the 80s. And they were mostly, you know, regulated to the sandbox. So, I mean, we had Mighty Mouse that came out that John Kay was involved with, Ralph Bakshi, which started, you know, people started taking notice of what was being done. And then there was Who Framed Roger Rabbit came out, which mm-hmm. which everybody started saying, oh yeah, what about those great cartoons that used to be around, the Bugs Bunnies, and it created this whole new resurgence of cartoons for that time. So that said, I mean, it took Nickelodeon, it took Cartoon Network to start taking chances, putting some money into some new cartoons. And then it was shown that they are successful commercially, and just like any other industry, where there's money, other properties will follow, and risks will follow. And so there are. But I, what I'm seeing is now, though, is that with ad revenue starting to drop a bit for the television realm and picking up in the internet realm, television is not. There are less risks being taken, in my opinion, with what's out.
One of the interviews you have, and one of my favorite features in the book, because I'm not reaching out to become the creator of an animated series at the moment, is I love your stories, and I also love the Q&As with creators. And one of the ones you have is with Everett Peck, who created Duckman, which I think is one of the great forgotten series of I think the 90s. It was on USA Network. Completely subversive, outrageous show. Jason Alexander was the voice of Duckman. Somewhere I still have a press kit for it out in the garage.
It really was, and Everett is I knew Everett from his illustration days in the 80s, where I was making a living as an illustrator as well. And when he came out with Duckman, I think it was one of those series that really was ahead of its time in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. There's new box sets out that everybody should revisit because they're brilliant. And I agree with you. I think it was a little bit overlooked, especially in the time of The Simpsons. And again, the writing was where it needed to be at the time. I think there were a few things that happened in the 90s with some of these cartoons that were coming out that people were just like, what is this? You know, how am I going to place this in a compartment in my mind, you know? And I think some of them, if they revisited them now, which I'm actually finding with a lot of people with Rocco, they revisit and they say, this, okay, I can see now what you're trying to do with that. You know, at the time, I was like, what is this? And, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing. You completely, in fact, they always say, if everybody latches onto something right away, then you're in trouble. I think you're not taking enough risks if everybody just completely gets it at first. And I think the best art forms out there will show you that they were probably rejected at first. And
I told you earlier that one of my favorite stories in the book, it comes a little late in the book now, because it's not fiction. I don't feel bad about asking you to give this away, tell this story, even though it's late in the book. There's not a linear story being told. It had to do with the influence of toy manufacturers on animation. This had to do with the early days of Rocco. I think you know the story I'm talking about. Would you mind sharing it with the listeners?
Yeah. I think it's called A Not-So-Funny Story About Rocco, which
yeah.
is... unfortunately, you know, I'll just preface this by saying that I really came out unscathed with the amount of changes that were made from Rocco from the moment I submitted it as a proposal to what got on the air. It's pretty true to what I ended up with. So I'm grateful for that. Nickelodeon was good to me in a lot of ways. And but there was this one situation, yeah, where originally Rocco was yellow, and when in animation you have to base the whole color palette, the whole color scheme around your main characters. Mm-hmm. And so one being yellow, one being golden yellow, you know, you have to deal with a lot of that. So we go on into full production on the series. The show gets greenlit. The pilot was done with Rocco and Yellow. And they start trying to sell the toys already before the show comes out. And there was one major plush toy maker, which will go nameless, who said, yeah, we like this property, but we already have a toy that is yellow, and could you change his color? And then we'll sign on. And when I heard this story, I thought it was a joke. I thought they were joking with me. Because another thing they said, we're not toy-driven. We're not Strawberry Shortcake. We're not trying to sell, you know, toys with what we're doing. It's about the animation. So I said, so, right, so we're not going to change this, right? Well, you know, it's a lot of money. And the people who made these decisions aren't there anymore, so I don't feel bad about But, you know, and they were good people in a lot of ways. But so we went back and forth, and it got down to where right before we're going to send the show off to Korea to anime, which is what you do in animation these days in TV, mm-hmm. they pulled rank and told me I needed to change the color. So I've hated the color of Rocco ever since. And it's like, I think it's a little bit like the story of Charles Schulz talking. He hated the name Peanuts, which was given to his strip from his syndicate. He hated it. He's always disliked it. So that's one of the things that goes along with it. You know,
well, and you know, in the case of Peanuts, it took 60 years, but the family finally got even with United Features when they pulled the strip from them when the contract expired a few weeks ago. So everything comes around.
Well, you know, and I talk about this in the book a lot. You got to keep in mind it's a commercial venture, you know, and that's it's the pendulum is constantly swinging back and forth between art and commerce. So you got to keep it in check and keep ducking out of the way.
Well, Joe, I had promised at the start of the show that sometime around now we'd be playing a sample of your new animation, Frog in a Suit. Unfortunately, I've been getting messages back from the studio that the video that we have won't start. So I want to send people, I want everybody to see it. So you want to go to Joe Murray, Murray Studios, .com, and check it out there. Be sure to see it. And let's talk a little about it. Frog in a Suit. Now, this sample that we're not seeing, of course, takes place in sort of a Starbucks-like place. What's the story behind Frog in a Suit?
Frog in a Suit was developed before Laszlo was done as my next show, but I wanted to find an alternative way of distribution on it. It's basically a group of indigenous frogs are moved back to their pond where they were from. They're an endangered species, and the pond has been taken over by toads, and the toads are being run. They're running the town, and the frog family is a hippie family, and the main character Pete Moss, who he's an up and comer, 20-year-old, and he's trying to make the transition. Do I go? The toads are not completely moral. They're not, you know, completely. They're more of how should I say? They don't make all their decisions based on what's best in the world. Mm. And so he's trying to make the transition. Do I go that way, or do I stay with my values that I've been taught by my family? It sounds a little heavy in concept, but there's all sorts of very bizarre characters that Pete encounters, and he's a frog in a suit, and it's like any of us who feel when we don a suit that it's a bit of a costume, and it's not exactly who we are, and how we're going to grapple with that. So,
and at the moment, this is intended first for KaboingTV.com, is that right?
Right, we're in the process of doing episodes that will appear only on the internet on KaboingTV.com, as well as other series that we can get up and running. And but we're also approaching international distribution as well for television.
And
but
what is
first
the,
and foremost?
Tell folks a little bit before we run out of time about Kaboing TV, when they might be able to see it, and what else will be up there.
Well, you know, we're aiming for a fall launch. And just like anything, it's a business startup, and where there's a lot of bells and whistles that need to be in place. And so, you know, in production, if you're familiar with it as animation, it takes a long time to grow the fruit and be able to share the fruit. So, and I'm more about the quality of what we're going to put out there than the quantity. So, you know, it'll be good, and it'll come out at the time, at the right time. I would ask to check back in
okay.
the fall, and check out. Just go to my website, joemurraystudio.com, and we have updates on where we are and behind the scenes footage of our production as we get closer.
Very good. Well, before we run out of time, everybody, I want you to go out and order Joe Murray's great new book, Creating Animated Cartoons with Character. I said it right that time. At great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it online right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. And, of course, you can also find DVDs of his series, Rocco's Modern Life and Camp Lazo, available there, too. And as he said, you can find out more about Frog in a Suit at JoeMurrayStudio.com. There's a lot of really cool other videos and behind-the-scenes stuff from his series there as well. And, Joe Murray, thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a lot of fun.
My pleasure, and sorry about the comments about the characters. I meant it all with love.
In that case, it's fine.
Okay. Thanks, Joe.
All right.
All right. And folks, for more original interviews with your favorite animators, and there are some on this site, surf over to our main website, MrMedia.com. And subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@mrmedia.com. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate you giving up a little piece of your day and spending it with us. Thanks for listening.
Chat About It, the future of internet radio. ChatAboutIt.com is the place to listen to new and exciting talk shows. Listen live. ChatAboutIt.com.